Over to you, Rahul.
Thanks a lot, Tanya. Hello, everyone. Great to see you all. And my name is Rahul. I'm a community engagement and learning volunteer at ODF. It's one of the roles that I really enjoy as I get to meet a lot of new people and learn about a lot of new things. I'm also a support consultant at On the Mark. And for the last two weeks, I've been working with Bruce for this presentation. So I'm really excited to finally be hosting this this session. And regarding Bruce, he presented the redesign the bottom line at the ODF 2021 conference. He's got 35 years as an external OD consultant experience and 10 years as an internal OD consultant. So immense depth of experience there. He's worked with 135 client organizations over the last 5 to 15 years. Many of them are from the Fortune 100 global clients like Motorola, Philips. Also worked with a lot of nonprofits, national government units. He's also taught leadership, strategy, and power in 9 graduate schools, including the Lake Forest and University of Chicago. He has an MS in OD, BFA in industrial design, 15 years as an evaluator for ADT's Excellence in Practice. And he's also written a lot of books on consulting and strategic impact. So really excited that both Bruce and I get some very interesting as well as different outcomes from today's session. Over to you, Bruce.
Well, Rahul, thank you. And I want to start out not with an outcome, but with a process comment that working with Rahul and Tanya, if you ever get a chance to do that, do it. They have been wonderful to work with, and I will blame anything goes wrong in this on them. Joke. I was just engaged in the conversation with the panel that Carlos led it, and I see a number of you were in it, and they had William and Richard talking about, is strategy still meaningful? And it's a great question anyway. What I really found though was the level of engagement in it. What I found is people getting into things quite thick. We didn't have time, of course, to get into a lot of depth because we only have an hour, but I got sparked by that to want to take it a little bit farther. And for me, one of the big things in my life is that question of meaningful for what? You know, this design, what are we trying to achieve anyway? And I like the word outcomes, or as a lot of us would say, and I would too, good outcomes. But what we didn't have time to get into in that last conversation is what does that mean? That what are the good outcomes that we are hopefully really creating? And I'm hoping today we can dig down that next layer and get a range of our own thoughts, things that we've seen, things that we've done, things that we wish we could do, but just to get a range by the end of this so that we can each take, you know, from this short list. It won't be a definitive one, won't be well researched, but I'm hoping we get a span. Now, I also found that there was some competition for that high engagement conversation when just a couple of days ago I went to see the movie Oppenheimer. You don't have to give me a show of hands if you've seen Oppenheimer. I was surprisingly engaged in that too. And I found it very relevant to this question of what outcomes are we producing? Are we producing atomic explosions for a good cause or for a bad cause? Oh, what a question. And because of that, I'm going to make a little bit of a shift today in terms of a little intro case I'm going to give that again, I'm going to give a couple of cases that I hope will get you thinking about yours. To me, this matters because as designers, we're not in charge, but we have access to lots of different kinds of power. And so I think it really matters what our opinions are and what we do about that. And I'll have to say that of all the clients I've had, and the numbers don't matter as much as the ones that any of us, when we've been able to be with a client for 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, we can start to see the patterns. We start to see what holds up. We also start to see what spreads, what kinds of viral spreading happens as a result of things we do, of things they do. And I hope that enters this conversation. One other thing that I saw recently, there was an HBR, Harvard Business Review article. It's from a couple of years ago. It said, ESG impact is hard to measure, but not impossible. And it talked about some of the mistakes that the author, thinks we make, that we measure what's apparent and we miss the system. And the other big one that I saw was we measure what's monetizable, but we miss the value. And you can hear some of my biases in that. I want to hear yours. I want to hear your clients' biases today. We're going to start with a poll. And Tanya has a poll that she's going to set up. I'm just going to put up a brief share screen. She already put it up. So I would ask if you would just look at the question, give your best answer. If you can pick one of these, you might want to pick more than one. Do your best to pick just one so we can see what your early thinking is here.
Sorry, Bruce, and you're limited to picking just one. I just made this a single choice.
Okay, this is authority.
Sorry if I got ahead of you. I'm launching that there.
It's all right.
I get to see it running neck and neck, the little race on the bars on the screen. But there has been one that has stayed consistently in front. All right, that's 19 of you responded. Last chance. I'll go ahead and share it. Our top choice is key outcome, staff engagement.
Okay. Well, what I hope we get to, now these are generic options. What I hope we get to when we go into the breakout rooms is, what does that look like? The staff engagement and some of those other things. What does it look like to you? What does it look like to your clients? What kinds of outcomes are your clients looking for too? But to get some concrete ones in there. Let me just put up my slides here. I have just a few, but I just want to show you what the plan is for today. You can see that. That's the title. It's that, what real purposes must our designs serve? And I can get that to work. This is the steps that I'm going to talk a little bit. We'll talk a little bit here in the group, and then we're going to go into breakouts for about 20 minutes, hopefully a little more timed and small breakouts to talk about this, those questions that are on the lower right there. What's a good outcome? Who says so? And how do you get that to come about? That's the agenda. And let me give you these two examples. These are the two that I picked after seeing Oppenheimer. First one, I call it a bad outcome. It was a big global chemical manufacturer. And they had one of the major parts of the company had been having trouble, and now they had a brand new executive in charge. And my job was to be to help them get started. They had this meeting of their top people, to help them get started in how are they going to get moving forward. Sounded like a good idea, but sadly, I didn't have any chance, not once, to communicate in any way with this new boss. So when it started, the new executive was leading the group, and she put out a starting statement of what she hoped we would accomplish today. She said, "By the end of this day, I want to see for each one of you what your profitability plans are." And I got sort of quiet. I noticed there was a lot of tension in the room. And so I spoke up, tried to be my facilitator self, and said, "As we talk about these profit plans, I'm curious what some of you think about. What are some of the things you're facing now?" And the leader cut me off and said, "No, I want to know how each of you is going to make a profit. And I mean this year." Well, that went on. At a break time, there was one of the top leaders in the company attending, and I cornered him. And I said, "I feel like there's something going on here. Let me tell you what I think, and then I'm interested in your perspective. It feels to me like we're focused entirely on the profit, and that these people are intimidated." And he said, "Bruce, I think you're right." He said, "There's nothing I can do about this. We want this lady to be in charge. And so, you know, I just wish you good luck." And well, I went back after that and still tried to work with them. In every case, I got cut off. At the end of the day, I did not have any friends among those people I was trying to empower. I did not have a friend among her. I quit. I didn't do it publicly, but the next day I turned in, I'm done here. And I suspect, I didn't talk to her as a debrief, I think she was very happy. Okay, that's one example of, I think of as a setup that we all get to be part of, hopefully better than that. Here's another one. And this one is the one I really grabbed onto after seeing Oppenheimer. It was a big manufacturing, global manufacturing. They made computer chips, really high tech, and it broke down. The machine that made the chips just broke down. It was disastrous because it was not only not working, it was making bad chips. And they're so complex technologically, they can't undo them. So it's all scrap, not even recyclable. And it was, I forget, it was like $1.6 million per minute or something when this thing was shut down that they were just losing. The boss convened all the managers and said, "I don't want the engineers to fix this. I want us together to fix it." 3-day offsite, all the managers. My job was to get them moving. And as we started, and this was at a nice place in Scotland, off-site, but we dove right in. But within the first hour, the supervisors weren't here. They were back at the plant running it. And they sent a note. And the note said, "Who do you people think you are?" They didn't use those words. "You don't know how this plant runs, and you're going to put together something while we're here scrapping, keeping it together." And they had a list of demands of what they wanted those managers to do while they're off site. As you can imagine, the managers were not unified in their response to that. Some of them said, who do they think they are? It's our job to run this place. And others were saying, this is refreshing. This is what we've been preaching the whole time, to get engagement, involvement. And they did not come to a full consensus, but they did, with the boss's push, agree to reconvene with as many supervisors. There were 80 in total. They wanted as many as they could in the room again for 2 days to redesign the whole plant if needed. And the supervisors joined them. They kicked right in. This is now about a week later, they had to reconvene. They came up with a design that was a complete reconfiguration of the plant. They reconfigured the plant because the supervisors demanded access to the managers, ongoing, not just this time, but ongoing. And so they put the plant in a way that had the managers in the center with the supervisors in their cubicles and by their machines working right next to them so that the communication could, could happen. They put some money into that. They did it really fast, put it together. Anybody have a hunch how it came out? I'll just give you the answer. It's a bad one. The answer was, the supervisors were totally intimidated by this design that they had pushed. They didn't want to walk out in the open, in the middle of everybody else, and start talking about important stuff. It failed. Well, the boss said, we need to reconvene. So the boss reconvened them again. This time they redesigned the plant to be right back the way it used to be, with the corner offices for the managers, for the, the top people, supervisors in as usual back over by the machines. And then they did that quickly, and the communication just went up, 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 up. They started talking to each other. The trust level was blatantly high. The customers, some problem customers who were the big bucks people, started to notice that they were getting response like they'd never had before. Things were happening fast like they never had before. And then senior management from the company started to notice. And over the next year, it just transformed the plant by redesigning it, failing, and then going back to the way they were. Why? I have my opinions. I'm not going to give them. What I'm hoping is that these are a couple examples that will remind you of things, interesting ones that you've run into, that will spark you to say, here's how to achieve the good outcomes and the good outcomes we need to be seeking. Tanya, is it possible for you to now break us into our breakout groups?
All right, so are you giving them a sense of what they're going into the breakout rooms to discuss?
Good idea. Let's see if I have this in a slide. Nope, I don't. But the two big questions, and I will post them into the chat, are what is a good outcome? And a good outcome can be one that you already helped create. It can be a good outcome you've always wished for and never had. But what is a truly good outcome? That's the big question. If you get to it, if you get some time, who should be included in choosing the good outcome? Should it be you, the designer? Should it be the client only? Should it be a committee? Who should be involved in choosing that good outcome? I'm given 20 minutes, hoping that in small groups, you'll each get some airtime, but that you can come back with a few interesting examples that we can put on the table. And then by the end of this, when we close it down, I'm hoping we have sort of a list, a range of outcomes that some of us and some of our clients think are the really good ones. So can you, is there a way for me to put this in chat, Tanya?
I think I captured the couple of notes that you just commented and put in there. So there's two questions. What does a good outcome look like and who should be involved? And then the goal as they come out of the meeting to, when you reconvene, is to maybe co-create what looks like a good outcome. Does that
not one, it might be a short list. You might have two that, oh, we really think this would be great, or three. And they don't have to be, agree. They can just be interesting and different.
Does anybody have any questions before then for Bruce, before I open up the rooms? All right, then I'm going to send you all in there. Have fun.
Few good ones. And I don't mean good as in totally positive, but interesting kinds of outcomes that you discussed. And I'm hoping that if you're in one of the groups as it's reporting, if you don't mind just putting a headline for it in chat so that we can save that chat and send it out to everybody. So I have this like a rough menu that we can gain from this. So it would be in your own group, one of you is reporting, if somebody else could just plunk it into chat. And I just hope we come out with, you know, some good ones. And Tanya, it would be useful to me. You said you could record this again?
Yep, you are all back on.
We're all being recorded. Okay, so whatever you say, keep it safe because we're being recorded. I'm going to first ask if somebody will jump in and report one. And if it starts to go slow, I'll start picking on people to say, hey, can your group go, just to keep us moving fast. Is anybody ready to jump in and give us an example of one or two or outcomes that you talked about?
I can jump in, Bruce.
Great.
There was a lot of conversation in our group, and I wrote down five, but I'm just going to try and pick one that for me seemed kind of interesting and maybe not as obvious. And that is, a good outcome is building the capability of the organization for the long term, which means building the skills, the confidence, and the, you know, the ability to continue to develop the organization. So that's the one of them that I thought was a nice one.
Building the ongoing competence. And it looks like somebody already put that into chat. Great. And Jody, thank you for yielding to others. And then, of course, you may have some time left to add one or two more of your five later. Anybody else ready to jump? Let me pick on, is there anybody from?
I'll go.
Go for it.
So I was with both Bernard and Pamela, and what we talked about, a good outcome is one where the design is strategy driven and that it benefits both the organization as well as its stakeholders. And we put a real big emphasis in the people in-house, people within the organization. And having that good outcome, obviously, where we ask the second question, it would ideally involve representatives of the people within the organization at different levels. It shouldn't be a design just simply, you know, done by those at the top, but it should include all voices. I don't know if Bernard or Pamela, you want to add something else?
No, I think that, well, that's great, Kristen. Thank you. I was just reading in chat as you were talking, and Mike, I'm assuming you captured Jody's report out. Is that right?
Most of it. Some of it, yeah.
Yeah. I'm struck by how important what it is that you said. Very different from our conversation. Not inconsistent or incongruous, but you know, I think designing for capability is so terribly important, right? Because yes, we can design for short-term adaptation to a new strategy. We can design for short-term business results, but as we all know, it is really the organization's capacity to evolve as the world evolves that matters. So designing for and that of course means then designing processes for evolution, improvement, whatever we call them. You know, yeah.
The word evolution I saw snuck into there. I like that. Like designing for the outcome of effective evolution.
I can jump in. So our conversation actually kind of centered around a couple of specific examples of change and design that we had been part of. Two of the three of us are in healthcare, so there had a very definite flavor to it. And one of the things I think we were evaluating in terms of thinking what a good outcome is that finding that balance between the stated goals, but also the resilience that's necessary in the system, because particular to healthcare, it's a long game. And so whatever the design is, there's a resilience component that's got to be part of it. Another aspect of that too is that depending on the way that the designs have been implemented, celebration, reflection could have been built in, or it could have been something that is almost missed in terms of getting that sense of an outcome. So one approach was very incremental, small steps. And so that sense of, well, did we have an outcome is actually even a question. Like we had a lot of outcomes. So do we have an outcome? I think was kind of an observation. So kind of a different spin on it, but not a definition per se, but more of a discussion of how do outcomes feel. So I don't know if anyone else in the group wants to add to that.
I want to add that you were hinting at something. I was in Miriam's group and you were hinting at something here that you said in our group, and that is that some of the important ones can't necessarily be measured, but we have to pay attention to them anyway. And I think you're getting at some of that. And it's difficult, maybe talking about it, celebrating it, or some other that, you know, deals with those feeling sides that are not always measurable. I like that.
Yeah, it's sort of like saying, does our intervention address the whole person of the people involved? There is a certain spirit that you inculcate in terms of how the work gets done. So do people feel more confident? Are they more open to listening to others? Can they build collaborative relationships? Do they grow in terms of their perception of the world and their role within it, grow with them? I mean, so there's a very personal aspect that I think we tend to not focus on a whole lot that might be helpful in terms of bringing an entire population of people along, in terms of helping them develop as human beings and position themselves with one another so they're more effective as a community.
Mike, do you believe those things are measurable?
Anecdotally, yeah. I can point to interventions that I've done where the nature of the people in the system changed. They became more collaborative. They seem to be more open to different points of view. They had a sense of agency. So, for example, they felt that they could have an impact in the world around them, that they weren't just a cork, you know, floating on the ocean.
Yeah.
So this whole sense of agency was something that was created as a result of some of the interventions.
Can I add, Mike, to what you just said? And I think the words that came to mind when I heard you saying that were decision rights. Because whenever I have seen people be given the opportunity to make those day-to-day decisions closer to the work, then you can measure that. And the impact is pretty incredible. So you know, it's that ownership and accountability for outcomes that's certainly measurable when we're paying attention to it.
It's amazing when you see people acting as though they're owners of the company.
Yes.
and they're taking a stake and a commitment to seeing the success of the organization. It's that whole idea of agency, the idea that, hey, I have a contribution to make here. And I think as a result, working with others, we can bring about a significant change.
Yeah.
Molly, I'm sorry, Mike.
Time is going here. And I'm thinking, what I'd like to ask is if any groups who haven't had a chance to report, especially if you have something that's very different than what's been put out so far, can you make sure that yours gets out here now? And if we really run out of time, could you at least put it in chat so we don't lose it? But if you can butt in and say, oh, we got one that was really different, that would help, because we have to shut it down to keep it on time. Anybody?
I can share. So there were only a couple of people that were able to be active in our group. But one of the things that we discussed was kind of the metaphor of chiropractic care. If org design, we talk a lot about structure, but we should be able to see that structure and how it impacts, how it pinches or supports nerves and blood vessels and muscles, you know, which are like processes and the people and decisions and flow of information in an organization. And so I tend to think in terms of range of motion, right? What is the range of motion of these teams and how they interact with other teams and departments and how those interact? And is there a pinch point where the structure needs to be adjusted? And then the impact we should see should be that those other things are working better, and that everyone feels that they're working better. And I also wanted to add, based on the discussion that we just now had, that we can always use self-analysis. Employees, supervisors, managers can discuss how they feel and what they are seeing and what they are, you know, observing and able to do and how it's different than before. And that's qualitative, but it is measurable. And with my background in ethnography, I tend to think of triangulation. If we can use one quantifiable measure and at least two qualifiable measures, right, then you know, then you've got kind of a 360 degree view of what's going on. Group or individual self-analysis isn't the whole of the information, but it definitely is important information because it measures a person's perception of reality, and their perception of reality is the reality that they interact with. And so that affects how they behave. And it all, you know, getting down to the microscopic parts, it all kind of comes down to how people behave.
So, thanks. With each other. So. We've got to give one more shot, last chance, and then Rahul has to turn it back over to Tanya. Who has one that's a zinger?
Hey, Bruce, there was a great discussion in our group about the role of the org designer and the facilitator and recognizing and calling our own bias in the process. And it's a tricky one. It depends on the situation, depends on who the economic buyer is, who the customer is. But, you know, there's a line in which we play and what we are retained for. And there are roles that we have in terms of influencing things. So that in itself can be a whole discussion in itself. But I wanted to put that on the table.
Thanks. Did somebody from your group put that one into the chat so we don't lose it?
Not yet, but we will.
Okay. Thanks. I wish we had another hour. I'm glad for you that we don't, because you have other things to do. Thank you for digging into this. I appreciate it, because I really do. A big part of my own career is to say, it matters as designers that we pin this stuff down. And like Jim said in the chat, and measure even the things that can only be indirectly measured. I think it really matters. So I hope that you will continue these discussions with your friends, and maybe there'll be some more with OD Forum too. Rahul, let me turn it back over to you.
Bruce, I think this was a really energizing session. Personally, I took a lot of the insights from the large group sharing. And I think there's a lot of things that I'll process even after this session. So thank you so much for conducting the session and for all the planning. It was really helpful, and looking forward for the next ODF session.
All right. Well, Rahul and Bruce, thank you both. Bruce, there was some additional information that was on your slide deck that we didn't see as you were kind of introducing your session. So if you want to give a moment of context before other words, I will add that.
Yes. Good idea. I had a huge deck of 7 slides, knowing that I would get to 3 or 4 of them. But that Tanya brought up the idea that some of you may prefer to see more than 3 or 4 pieces of content. If you look at those slides, I think you'll find a few different angles that we couldn't have gotten to today, but I will leave that up to you to look at the slides. We'll make them available. And also, it's always true for me that if you have any criticisms of these slides, that one is stupid, I don't like it. Compliments are okay, but disagreements are wonderful. So if you ever want to contact me about any of those ideas, please do. What I like about this group is that we have the ability to differ and to gain from it. And I suspect that we get that a lot from our clients. Tanya, let me give you the chance to close us down.
All right. Well, thank you both for volunteering again and making the time, the rest of you for being here. Hopefully it was a good use of your hour for today. I'll send out a note to let everybody know when we have this recording and the deck and the content from the chat posted on our past events. And as always, these are put together by our community engagement volunteer team. So if you have a topic you would like to bring for consideration, just let me know and I'll connect you with someone from the engagement team. This was Bruce's request after participating in that role of strategy and org design session. And I think it turned out, based on the number of you who showed up and participated, to be something good. So that's our goal, is not to have the 6 or 7 of our volunteers always come up with the content. It's to help be the conveners of the community to bring information together that you find value in. So please let me know if you have another topic. We have one brewing for October that's going to be facilitated by Paul Tolchinsky, and it's going to be Fanish Pernahem and Chuck Snow talking about AI in org design. Chuck has a part of a book that he's releasing in November that he's going to discuss, and Fanish is going to be talking about a tool, and I believe it is a free tool, that they are launching for the use of AI in org design and how they've related the two together. So that information will be coming out in early October once we get all the details organized. So with that, I wish everyone a great rest of your day, I'll stay on for a moment if anybody has any questions. Otherwise, we'll look forward to seeing you in the coming weeks. Thanks, everyone.